Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barra, and joining me is Brian. And we are re-recording an episode.
Yeah.
Because someone forgot to hit the save button.
It wasn't me. That's all I can say. You're the one at the computer, so.
No comment. All right, so today we are talking about Charles the Sixth of France.
Le France.
Also known as the Glass King. So you are going to be needed to help me with my pronunciations here.
All right. I didn't take French, but I'll try.
So Charles was born in Paris, December 3rd, 1368. Long time ago.
Yeah.
He was the son of King Charles V and Joanna of Bourbon. Of the Bourbons.
The same Bourbons that will eventually be... the kings of Spain later.
Yes. That's a region of France, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That too.
Is it Bourbon-y?
I think it's just Bourbon.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Like Brittany or Saxony.
Oh, we'll talk about Brittany, I think. He would hold the title Dauphin of France until he'd become king upon his father's death in September 16, 1380. So if you had named Dauphin in France, that meant you were next in line to become king. Not like Flipper.
Or like what's that one movie about the dolphin that like lost its tail?
Dolphin Tales.
Okay.
One or two. They made a sequel. They made a sequel. Yeah, I don't know why.
I've been to the aquarium where the dolphin was.
Did you see it?
I don't remember.
Oh.
My sister was freaking out though. That's all I can remember.
So Charles would be crowned at 11 years old. And he's going to have regents until he turned 21. So that's typically what happens. Little kid becomes king. Other people rule the country for them until they're old enough to do it themselves.
Like Cardinal Richelieu.
Yep. And then Louis the 14th, correct?
Yes.
Charles would be referred to as Charles the Beloved by his subjects. This was because his regents were really bad and they embezzled all the money. And so when he became 21, he started like...
Not embezzling money.
So,
you can't really embezzle money if it's all supposed to go to you anyway.
That's true. But that's why they loved him.
Because he didn't embezzle.
Yes, because he wasn't a crook.
Yeah.
He also brought back his father's advisors, the Marmosets, who would help lead the country to more prosperity.
Wow, that's good.
His early success, however, would be derailed by mental illness. He started having episodes in his mid-20s. He'd have bouts with psychosis, which involves seeing hallucinations and having delusions. Apparently, it ran on his mother's side.
Ah.
Yeah, there was a history of that. Soon, they stopped calling him Charles the Beloved and now called him Charles the Mad. Quick turn of events there.
Yep.
6 years. That's about how long it took. His first episode occurred in 1392. His friend and advisor, Oliver de Clisson, was the victim of an attempted murder. Clisson survived, and Charles became determined at this point to punish the would-be assassins. The assassin's name was Pierre de Crayon.
Did he like crayons?
No, there's no why.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He had taken refuge in Brittany, and the Duke of Brittany refused to hand him over. As a result, Charles prepared to invade. So he set off with his army on July 1st, 1392. It was said... He appeared to be in fever and disconnected with his speech. Probably not good for the guy leading an army into battle.
Yeah, probably.
Army's progress was extremely slow.
He was still probably better than McClellan.
That is true. Most people. Yeah. Army's progress was slow, which basically drove Charles into a frenzy of impatience. As the king and his escort were traveling through the forest near Le Mans. Now there's a racetrack there. 24 hours of Le Mans. 24-hour race. That's,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like a car race?
It's like basically last car running wins for the most part. On a hot August morning, a barefoot leper, if you don't know what leprosy is, the disease where like your face falls off.
At first, I thought you said like a leopard, like a
ooh.
An animal. Leopard.
I don't think those are indigenous to France, are
probably
they?
Probably not.
It got away. It got away from the king's court. But anyway, a leper, dressed in rags, rushed up to the king's horse and grabbed his bridle. And he started screaming, "Ride no further, noble king. Turn back. You are betrayed." The king's escorts beat the man back, but did not arrest him. And he just kept on following them, screaming that for the next half an hour. All right. So the company emerged from the forest at noon. A page who was drowsy from the sun dropped the king's lance, which clanged loudly against a steel helmet carried by another page. Charles shuddered, drew his sword, and yelled, "Forward against the traitors! They wish to deliver me to the enemy." The king spurred his horse and began just violently swinging his sword at anybody that was around him. Basically, members of his group were eventually able to grab him, throw him off his horse, and lay on top of him. And then he fell into a coma. He went catatonic, I think.
All right.
I think his brain just shut off. So now he's in a coma. He was taken to a castle of Krill, where good air and pleasant surroundings might bring him back to his senses. He had killed a knight known as the Bastard of Polignac and several other men in his frenzy.
Imagine being named that. Like, everyone just knows you.
And that's what you're known as. Yeah. You're known as in history now? Yeah.
Like, you don't even get a chance to, like, get a different name. That's just what you're called. That,
I mean, we don't even know what this guy's real name is.
Yeah. Like, you don't get to be renamed, like, the noble of, or the savior of. You're just the bastard.
The Silly Billy of Polignac?
Yeah.
Periods of mental illness continued throughout the king's life. During one in 1393, he could not remember his name and did not know he was king.
That's probably not good.
No.
If you're king.
Don't want that if you're a leader. When his wife came to visit, he asked his servants who she was and ordered them to take care of what she required so that she would leave him alone. I think he just doesn't like his wife.
Yeah, maybe.
He's like, "Who is this woman? Go hither." During an episode in 1395, he claimed he was St. George and that his coat of arms was a lion with a sword thrusted through it. At this time, he recognized all his officers, but not his wife or his children.
I
just don't think he likes his family.
I mean, he would have seen his officers more than his wife and children anyway.
Yeah. Back in the day, so. But I still, yeah, he meant that. Sometimes he ran wildly through the corridors of his Parisian residence, the Hotel St. Paul. And to keep him inside, they had to wall it up. So they literally had to lock him inside the castle. In 1405, he refused to bathe or change his clothes for 5 months. This was because he had aquaphobia, which is the fear of water. He would also have his bed put in the center of the room to avoid puddles because castles back then were garbage. And they were always flooding.
I mean... probably like bathed more frequently than Louis did.
Yeah.
14.
Or
who only bathed 3 times in his life.
Or Ludwig.
Ah, yeah.
Ludwig was a non-bather too.
I listened to that episode.
I've
been to his castle.
You have been?
Yeah.
So have I.
It's really
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Even though it's unfinished.
Yeah.
Still cool though.
It's yeah.
Remind me, I got to ask you about your tour guide later.
All right.
He had a pet dog that he believed to be his brother. The dog was given a royal title and was allowed to sleep in the king's bed.
Aww.
So he likes his dog more than his family. Charles also believed he was a swan at one point. This would cause him to walk around with his arms flapping and making swan noises.
I didn't know swans made noises.
And they go, "Hurr!" Yeah, that's what they sound like.
Wow.
Swans are actually a lot of military bases uses them as guards.
Because
they can see 360 degrees and they get spooked easily.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So they'll put them on the perimeter and then you start hearing, and you know there's something out there. His later psychotic episodes were not described in detail, perhaps because they were all similar. Pope Pius II, who was born during the reign of Charles VI, wrote in his commentaries that there were times when Charles thought he was made of glass and thus tried to protect himself in various ways so that he would not break. This included having iron rods sewn into his clothes so that he would not shatter. If he came in contact with another person, the rods would protect him. This condition became known as glass delusion. Apparently, he's not the only one, if they had to name the condition.
They didn't name it Charles the Sixth Syndrome?
No. Oh, that would have been better. And now tragedy is going to strike.
Oh, no.
It's not going to be good for his mental state. On January 29, 1393, a masked ball, which later became known Ball de Ardent, or the Ball of the Burning Men.
Oh, we learned about this in Europe.
Off to a great start. Had been organized by Isabel of Bavaria to create the wedding of one of her ladies in waiting at the Hotel St. Paul. At the suggestion of Huguet de Guise, the king and four other lords dressed up as wild men, and they were dancing around. They were in costumes of linen that were sewn around their bodies, and it was soaked in a resinous wax or pitch to hold a covering of frazzled hemp so that they would appear shaggy and hairy from head to foot. At the suggestions of one Yavan de Foix, the king commanded that the torchbearers were to stand at the side of the room because they were dancing around in highly flammable outfits. Nonetheless, the king's brother, Louis I, Duke of Orleans, who arrived late, approached with a lighted torch in order to discover the identity of the masqueraders, and he set them on fire.
Huh.
By accident. Sure he did.
Is this another just an accidental death to... Oh no, now I'm on the throne, my poor brother.
Might be. The Duchess of Berry threw the train of her gown over the king in order to protect him. Several knights who tried to put out the flames were severely burned. Four of the wild men perished. Charles de Poitiers, son of the Count of Lantois, Huguet de Guise, Yavan de Foix, and Count of Jougny.
Those are definitely some French names.
One guy survived because he jumped in the bathtub.
Ah.
That had just randomly had standing water in it. Okay. Which is weird because Charles doesn't like water.
Maybe they just had it filled just in case, you know?
I feel like this guy was behind it too. Charles VI believed that he had died during the ball as well. So he refused to eat or drink for days because he convinced himself he was a corpse.
Don't know how you can be a corpse when you're walking around.
Walking and seeing and breathing, yeah. With Charles VI mentally ill from 1393, his wife Isabel presided over a regency council on which she sat the grandest of the kingdom. At this time, Philip the Bold, who was the Duke of Burgundy, acted as the regent during the king's, basically his bouts.
It's a
good one. It's better than the bastard.
Yeah.
Influence progressively shifted to Louis I. I'm sure it did. The king's brother, Duke of Orleans. He's becoming more and more powerful. He was also having an affair with the queen. There might be some truth that he tried lighting his brother on fire. Just saying. The rivalry would increase bit by bit and eventually result in an outright civil war between Louis I and Philip the Bold. They're basically fighting over the king's power, even though the king was still alive. The new regents dismissed the various advisors and officials Charles had appointed. On the death of Philip the Bold in April of 1404, his son, John the Fearless.
Man, they've got good names.
They do have good names in that family. Yeah. He took over the political aims of his family, and the feud with Louis escalated. John, who is linked to Isabel, again lost influence at the court. In 1407, Louis of Orleans was murdered. Oh, wonder who did that. John denied responsibility. I'm sure he did, claiming that Louis was a tyrant who squandered money. Louis's son, Charles, the new Duke of Orleans, turned to his father-in-law, Bernard the VII, Count of Armagnac, to support against John the Fearless. So the civil war is still going on. And this resulted in the Armagnac-Burgundian Civil War, which lasted from 1407 to 1435. And to make things worse, Charles was at war with the English.
Oh, man. I mean, they're always at war with
the English. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Hundred Years' War is going on. And then you got this civil war breaking out in France. With the English taking over much of the country, John the Fearless sought to end the feud with the royal family by negotiating with the Dauphin Charles, who I'm assuming would be Charles the VII.
Probably.
They met at the Bridge of Montreal, And during the meeting, John was killed by a follower of the dolphin.
Okay.
He's like, that's how we end this. John's successor, Philip the Good.
They've got like bold, fearless, and then just like good.
Yeah, he's just not the same. He's just good. Yeah, he's all right. He's all right. The new Duke of Burgundy, or Dirk, threw in his lot with the English. Oh, he's a traitor.
Oh, no.
He's like, the enemy of thy enemy is thy friend. Charles VI's reign was marked by the continuing conflict with the English known as the Hundred Years' War. An early attempt at peace in 1396 when Charles' daughter, the almost, this is gross, seven-year-old Isabel de Valois married 29-year-old Richard II of England.
What?
So almost, he...
You said almost seven-year-old.
Yeah, so she's six.
That's not even... Oh, my God. I mean, it's still really bad.
Yes.
Not even like... Oh my
yeah,
God.
So he marries his six-year-old daughter off to the King of England, hoping that brings peace. It doesn't. By 1415, however, the feud continued. Between the French royal family and the House of Burgundy led to chaos and anarchy throughout France, a situation that Henry V of England, who's now in charge, was eager to take advantage of because there was some English territory in France called Normandy.
Ah.
And he was trying to basically reclaim a good chunk of it and all that stuff. Henry led an invasion that culminated in the defeat of the French army at the Battle of Agincourt. The English...
Oh, isn't that where like Henry V fought?
Yep. And that's where the middle finger comes from.
Ah.
Because the English had longbows that you pulled back with your middle finger, and they were, like, revolutionary. They could shoot super far, super fast, and, like, penetrate armor. And the English, because battles were really weird back then, like, you met out at, like, half a field, and were like, these are the rules. Let's flip a coin to see who's going to attack. Not really to flip a coin, but they actually, like, made rules of engagement and stuff like that. And the French said, when we get done with you, we're going to chop off your all your middle fingers so you can't pull your bows back anymore. And then the French were dumb and they decided to walk across a swamp and they all got stuck in the mud and shot with the longbows. And then the longbowsmen were like, look at what we still got. That's where it came from.
Ah, nice.
The more you know. In May 1420, Henry V and Charles VI signed the Treaty of Troyes, which named Henry as Charles' successor. That's one way to end a war. Make the guy who you're fighting the next in line to become king. Yes. And stipulate that Henry's heirs would succeed him on the throne of France. It disinherited the dolphin Charles, then only 17 years old.
Oh, not the dolphin.
No. The treaty also betrothed Charles VI's daughter to Henry. Oh, another one. He's just marrying off all his daughters to the English monarchy. disheartening the dolphin in favor of Henry was blatant act against the interests of the French people. Dolphin, who had declared himself regent for his father when the Duke of Burgundy invaded Paris and captured a king, had established a court at Bourget. Not like a court like Judge Wapner's People's Court, like a court like a castle with nobles and all that stuff. Well, Charles VI dies on October 21st, 1422, at his palace at the Hotel St. Paul. He was interned in St. Denis Basilica, where his wife would join him after her death. Henry V died just a few weeks before him, though, leaving an infant son who became King Henry VI of England. Therefore, according to the Treaty of Troyes, with the death of Charles VI, King Henry VI of England will now become King of France, and he will be coronated at Notre Dame Cathedral.
As an infant?
Yes.
Nobody tell him, and then everything is back to normal.
Correct.
Except all the English,
probably. Dolphin Charles is not having any of this. He is going to continue to fight, and with the help of Joan of Arc, who, if you don't know who Joan of Arc was, she was a peasant woman who thought God was talking to her. So she shaved off her hair and went to Charles and was like, God wants me to lead you to victory. And he's like, go for it. And she leads him to victory.
Nice.
And then she gets captured by the English and they burn her at the stake. That's... because she's like, you're a heretic. You're not speaking to God. You're a witch. So we will burn you.
Huh.
Yes. And then 5 years later, they were like, sorry, you weren't a witch. Our bad.
And now she's a saint.
Now she's a saint, yes. It was a really weird history there. She led his forces against the English and took him to be crowned in Reims Cathedral as King Charles VII of France in 1429. He became known as Charles the Victorious because he was able to restore the French line to the throne of France after defeating the English permanently in 1450, thus ending the Hundred Years' War.
Ah, that's better than being known as the Mad.
Or the Bastard.
That too.
Or the Silly Billy.
Yeah.
You get some really good ones. You get like the Lame, the Fat, the Ugly, the Deformed.
There's the Orange. No, that's Of Orange.
Of Orange, yeah.
That's like a place, though.
But yeah, they don't, yeah. Medieval naming is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you for listening to us. Next episode will be in 2 weeks.
Yes, we are starting to do bi-weekly.
Yes, because we are approaching finals week, and it's about to get chaotic here at the school. So we will be going bi-weekly for next month or so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.